So tonight's question is, what if we had to start the Socialist Party from scratch? So, you know, as an opener, I said, well, you know, the SPGB was born into a gaslit Edwardian England of hansom cabs and handlebar moustaches. The Russians and Japanese were fighting with the coal-powered battleships. The Belgians were in the Congo. Louis Blériot hadn't flown across the Channel. And so we regard our history as a sort of huge legacy and a huge asset. But arguably, it's also something of a burden. And if we had to start again from nothing today, what would we do differently? The obvious answer might be nothing. We wouldn't change a thing. We did everything right the first time, and we'd do it all again. Maybe, maybe not. But what we do know is the world has moved on by a century since a lot of our founding decisions were made. So, you know, this is by way of a thought experiment to give ourselves some perspective over those decisions. And anyway, I find it hard to believe that we've never made a single mistake, you know, either in our general mode of organisation or our, you know, general presentation of the ideas, just because no party is that perfect. So, OK, if we had to start again, well, for a start, we wouldn't have any money, we wouldn't have any premises, and given the cost of today's property prices, and given the facility for communication online, and the idea of us as a new party saving up to buy a physical building would be quite far down the priority list, if it appeared at all. Apart from anything else, imagine how easy EC meetings would be if we never had to sort out head office bills and building maintenance problems. Would we even rent a shop front? Well, again, I think that's debatable. I mean, you see how many high street shops are closing down right now and have been in the last few years. We wouldn't have a large retinue of very old and inactive members. So presumably the new membership of the new organisation would be 100% active, which would create a very dynamic and lively atmosphere, quite exciting to be involved in. Whether the gender or the ethnic balance would look different from now is probably a whole subject of debate by itself. Of course, obviously, we wouldn't have the luxury of being able to say, we said so-and-so in 1925 and we said such-and-such in 1918 and look how right history has proved us. That part of our legacy would be a huge loss, an irreplaceable loss. But without that historical precedent, well, maybe we'd be obliged to press our arguments with rather more vigour, because we wouldn't have the option of sitting back on our historical laurels. And sometimes I wonder if we overrate the importance of our historical credentials. Most people don't care what we said in 1924. What they care about is what we're saying now and whether it makes sense. But even so, no sane person is going to suggest that we dispensed with all this history. The question is, what else are we dragging behind us in the baggage train? Are we sure it's all strictly necessary? Or is it the case that we are just too sentimentally attached to them to let them go? Now, as I said, obviously the world has changed enormously since 1904, geopolitically, socially, and technologically. It's almost impossible to overstate the impact of the computer and communications revolution. If we started today, when, you know, people are getting their news online and through social media, and the newspaper industry is in historic decline, we'd be pretty media savvy. We'd be pretty social media savvy. And I think it's highly unlikely that we would bother publishing a paper magazine at great cost to ourselves and for which we could never hope to achieve widespread distribution in retail outlets and large commercial chains. Now, I'm not resurrecting the notion of an online-only standard here, except just to point out in passing that this is a legacy activity and we are holding on to it, but a new group probably wouldn't do it or wouldn't invest in it. Or I might be wrong. It's been pointed out that you can pass on a paper magazine to your friends, or you can leave it on the bus or something. But, you know, nowadays it's surely easier to send friends a new snippet on Facebook or WhatsApp or one of the others, or email them a link to a website. It's much easier to do that shortly than to hand them over a paper magazine. Okay, so what else might we not do? Well, I think two physical AGMs in a year. This arrangement where we discussed things at ADM in the autumn and then we passed resolutions at conference around at Easter, this kind of belongs to a time when all correspondence was by letter post. And it wasn't even that long ago, certainly that way when I was first in the party, and it sometimes took months for communications, such as EC minutes, to percolate around all the party branches. So back then, it kind of made sense that you needed two sessions, one to discuss ideas in the autumn and another one to vote on ideas in the spring. Although in practice, it never really worked because people's memories didn't seem to last 6 months. And by spring, everybody had pretty much forgotten what had been discussed in the previous autumn. And one other thing was that disputes, when they did occur, they could drag on for years because of the slow pace of communications, giving time for both sides to become factions and for opinions to become entrenched. Nowadays, I've noticed, I don't know if you have, but if there ever is a bit of a bust-up or a controversy in the party, it's usually over in a month or so. They just don't seem to drag on. Nowadays, as we've seen lately, there's no difficulty with having business-type meetings online. So physical meetings would be more likely oriented towards active promotional events rather than internal administrative procedures. And here I think we do suffer from a legacy of overweight bureaucratic procedures, which too many members mistake for actual activity. And I'm certainly not the first person to say that, by any means. I can remember, some of you may as well, seeing an article from the old Forum magazine from the 1950s, and I think it was written by Ken Smith. I remember the phrase he used to describe the party as hag-ridden with democracy. The point he was making, and which still obtains today, is that you can be democratic without making a perpetual dog's dinner of it. Now, with the abolition of geography as a pressing concern, at least within related time zones, it's debatable whether we would confine ourselves to the territory currently known as Great Britain, what Dick Donnelly once called a wet and windy bird sanctuary in the North Atlantic. I mean, in fact, as things stand, we've got members in the SBGB from many countries around the world anyway, so calling it the SP of GB would be a bit of a non-starter, and so we could also avoid the uncomfortable nationalistic overtones of the name. And then, of course, inevitably, there's the word socialist in the title. Again, I should stress that I'm not advocating any seismic changes in the party here, if only because I think there's zero chance of the membership ever agreeing to them. But I think you could make a good case that whatever we decided to call ourselves, the word socialist would be the last and worst option. In fact, we might very well regard the word as the kiss of death, the one thing guaranteed to make us fail at the outset. As to what we could call ourselves instead, or the society we're proposing for that matter, well, that's anybody's guess. We know that Marx used up to six terms. And of course, there are lots of other modern options. Zeitgeist used the term resource-based economy. And then there's Falk, fully automated luxury communism. One that I particularly favour is post-capitalist common ownership. But, you know, it wouldn't be hard to find other terms. So anyway, in a sense, all this is, I suppose, fairly superficial. What about the case itself? Is there anything there that we would change today or at least reconsider? Now, on the whole, I think probably not. It's all pretty solid. It was then, it is now. I must admit, I do find the party's opposition to the suffragette movement an embarrassment. I understand the reasons for it, but in modern, in modern parlance, consider the optics, there's just no way that it doesn't look bad for us. And in fact, I'd go out on a limb here and say we've been wrong all along about gender issues by inconsistently placing gender discrimination outside the class struggle while placing racism inside the class struggle. That doesn't make sense to me. Anyway, clearly, today I think our emphasis would be quite a bit different, and of course is different, than it was in 1904, with a lot more consideration being given to things like racism, women, and the environment, of course, things that weren't really even considered as political issues in Edwardian England. And that's just in the necessary way of things, because, while the theoretical case doesn't change, the way it's applied does change, and of course it has to change, because the Partley case isn't some sort of 100-year-old fossil. It's a dynamic and evolving entity that moves with the times. When you think about what the left has done during the last century, to say nothing at all of the right wing, I don't think there's anything wrong with our position on them either. I do think today we might be a bit kinder about anarchists than we were historically. I think anarchists now are quite different from how they were at the turn of the 20th century. Many anarchists do think like us, or very similar to us, and some of them even vote in elections. So at the risk of bringing up the whole fellow travellers controversy, I think there's a legacy of hostility towards other groups that doesn't really do us any favours, even if there are differences with those groups. And of course, speaking of hostility, it's a no-brainer that if we were writing the Declaration of Principles today, we would not do it in quaint and grandiose Edwardian language. Would we talk about waging war with everyone? Hardly. Would we be hostile to everyone? No, I don't think so. That language, sectarianism and hostility, is another part of our legacy, which a new party would just see as off-putting, and which incidentally has been sent up cruelly by popular culture. You only have to think of Citizen Smith or the Judean People's Front sketch. Why would we expose a new party to needless caricature? Okay, well, that's a few ideas I had, and in a minute, hopefully you're going to think of some other things to say about this. As I say, it's a thought experiment, just to distinguish between what we think are the must-haves of a new party and the legacy stuff, the perhaps the nostalgic trappings of an old party. And the question, I suppose, really is, how much is all that nostalgia costing us? And is it helping us to communicate with workers, or is it getting in the way? And also, how revolutionary is it to hang on to things if you don't really need them? Okay, so on that bombshell, as they say, it's over to you. If you want to use the speaking cue...
Paddy, can you say, are you going to use the speaking cue?
Yeah, but use the speaking cue, you might as well.
Interrupt.
Yeah, do that.
What, use the speaking cue or not?
Yeah, might as well.
Okay,
Freddie, off you go.
Yeah, there you go. To some extent, Paddy, what you've touched on there tonight, I don't know if it's, well, it won't be known yet as such, but I've been invited to make an address on the Discord, and I've agreed to do so toward the end of June. This month's full up, and I'm away at the beginning of June, etc. So it looks as if I will be making some form of address on the Discord platform toward the end of June. And then, Pat, what you've been touching on tonight, Paddy, I can identify with, because that's very much around the sort of subject matter that I anticipate talking about where the party is just now, where it could be, where it should be, etc. But I can say that for my part, and I think certainly some members will be aware also just now that we're looking to reform, at the very least, a discussion group in the Yorkshire area. And we were having a Zoom meeting last night, and I touched on this subject with them then, and they were enthusiastic about it. So whatever ideas may evolve towards the end of June may not exclusively be my own. But in terms of some of what you say, I couldn't wholeheartedly agree to it. I'm not convinced that we need to start from scratch. I believe the party has a good record of moving with the times and the articles and its analysis of whatever it may be. I think the party really does have a good approach to it. And I don't believe that necessarily, I'm not convinced yet, I'll put it that way, that dropping the word socialist from her name. I mean, the examples that you give, Paddy, I was nearly doubled up laughing at them, if truth be told. So I think the party has a good record. For me, it's how we actually try to progress it. And in my opinion, the party should be, when I give the address on Discord, I'll be looking really, not so much for what I'm saying, but really for what the wider membership is saying. Because I feel at times, as good as what this is, Discord, and as good as the subjects have been, we're talking to ourselves. And when I was talking to comrades last night from the Yorkshire area on Zoom, some of them don't wish to participate in this type of activity and be more direct and actually meet up physically. So clearly we need to look at what it is we're doing. That's a matter of fact. I think we do it, and we should try and move forward perhaps with whatever new ideas. And I know that's what you're talking about in particular. So I'll be quiet at this moment.
Well, yeah, that's fair enough. I mean, let me reiterate, I am not proposing that we start again from scratch. That's not the point of this. It's a thought experiment. It's what if we had to start from scratch? What would it look like? How would we look different? I thought I'd made that clear. The other thing about, I understand there are a lot of members. Sorry, Mike, I'll come to you in a sec. There are a lot of members who don't believe in members talking to, just talking to ourselves, although they're not right. There are frequently visitors, more often at the Friday session than the Wednesday session, but there are visitors to non-members at these things. And the members who don't want to talk to other members, who think it's a waste of time, if all of us had thought that way, the Socialist Party would have been completely dead for the last 14 months. Think about that. They should think about that. Okay, over to Mike.
Just like to clarify that myself, though, Paddy.
Oh, go on then.
I'm suggesting that those members that I've been talking to have thought this was a waste of time. Not for a moment have they suggested that, that they think it's a waste of time.
Okay, fair enough, yeah. Okay, so Mike Foster.
Yeah, thanks for that. Yeah, you've thought about a lot of the bases or the different aspects of the issue more than I had. You know, I gave it a quick think on the drive home from work and came up with a couple of thoughts. But yeah, you've covered a lot already. I joined the party in the mid 90s, and I've noticed quite a sort of a shift in the culture since then. So yeah, I'd sort of like to echo what Freddie said about the party sort of always reinventing itself, not necessarily consciously, just sort of moving with the times. But I think that if the party did start from scratch these days, and I'm not sure if you touched on this much yourself, Paddy, that I don't think we'd fall into the.
I think I've lost you, Mike.
I think Mike may have fell into the abyss.
I think he has fallen into the abyss. Mike, I'm sorry, we can't hear you anymore. Oh, dear.
I think he's been disconnected by accident. That's happened to me a few times. I've had to rejoin.
Okay, well, while we're waiting for Mike to reconnect... Oh, Dougie's come up, so, yeah. Dougie.
All right, yeah. I mean, I think one of the things we might say if we were starting from afresh is that, capitalism has been an innovative system, and you know, people do badly in it, but some people do all right in it, but it could be so much better, you know. I think one of the problems with some members of the party, they think everything's shit because it's capitalism or whatever. And that's not how workers see things, really, you know, or most workers see things. I mean, Marx talked about capitalism being the best society so far. And, you know, we can put forward socialism as a far better society. But this idea that everything's shit because it's capitalism, I think we have to move away from that, really. Yeah.
I agree. Dougie, I think you might want to check your connections because you're really, really crackly, which you didn't used to be. So there might be a connection. Maybe you've got a wire loose or something. Mike Foster's going to come back in a minute. Anybody else, meanwhile? Yeah, Darren?
Just an initial thought. I apologise if I haven't got any kind of new ideas initially, but I think I'd be a disservice if I didn't, you know, you kind of like understandably was looking back at the party, especially like if you like the Edwardian party. But I do think you did it a bit of a disservice. I think there was, that, you know, obviously looking back, it's difficult to understand this now, like over 100 years later. But there's very specific reasons why the temper of the language, the sharp positions on, for example, the suffragettes, that we looking back just don't fully understand. And I generally think part of the reason why party adopted the tone it did was one that was like a young organisation, not just because it was formed, but also because of the individuals involved. But it was also, you're also talking about an organisation which generally did believe that socialism was on the horizon. They were like, they'd been expelled from their parent organisation, the Social Democratic Federation. So they'd sort of started up afresh, but they generally did look to the German SPD. They did look to the French Socialists. They did, you know, they did look to the Second International, and they generally thought, even if these major organisations weren't in themselves socialist organisations, as we saw it, there was a significant minority of socialists within those organisations. And part of the reason they formed was to basically, you know, take up the British baton, if you like, of what they saw as a worldwide movement. So that is partially an explanation for why there was this combative language in the Declaration of Principles. I disagree with you on the issue of the suffragettes. I generally think if you look at the suffragettes, as was in 1904 up until the First World War, you are talking about, you know, to paraphrase, middle-class votes for middle-class women. It was a class issue. And when the SPGB was formed in 1904, they generally thought that socialism was on the agenda here and now, which we obviously can't comprehend. None of us, even the oldest member here, cannot really understand how tangible they thought socialism was. So to actually go down like a cul-de-sac of like certain votes for a certain section of society was considered something which was actually impeding socialist revolution. So that's just my initial thoughts from my party history hat on to what you said. You know, there's other thoughts that arise, you know, from your talk, but, you know, just let other people contribute from there. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Darren. Yeah, that's interesting what you say. And it's something it did occur to me to say that of course back then, yeah, they did think that socialism was on the horizon, and they would have been a young party, and that does explain why they were sort of so assertive, not to say, you know, aggressive. Historical context is everything, isn't it? Mike Foster, you are you back with us now? Oh, you there? Are you able to speak now?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yep.
Oh, right. Yeah. Did you not hear me before?
No, you just disappeared halfway through while you were speaking.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Sorry, I didn't notice. I don't know what happened there. How far did I get?
Can't remember. Start again.
Right, yeah. I think if the party sort of began again from scratch today, I'm not sure if we'd have the same
sort of structure, you know, the sort of the grouping ourselves into branches as we do, and all the procedures, you know, the form C's, the proposing a motion. I'm not sure if we'd do that in quite the same way. I think maybe we'd first look at a sort of a national membership or a regional membership, rather than sort of localising it around around cities where there are members. You know, as I say, a lot of the procedures come from a tradition which might be quite off-putting to lots of younger people today, you know, just because they're not used to it, or, you know, haven't encountered it through trade unions or that way of doing things. So I think we'd first look for something which was just as democratic, just as equal and open and transparent. And we'd probably come up with something sort of similar to the structure we've got now. But yeah, I think we'd look at it in a different way, you know, the whole organisation of the party. Cheers.
Yeah, I think that's if we started off at sort of, you know, quite a small party, we probably would do that. I was thinking that about branches, but you know, that I think that's probably a function of size and numbers, isn't it? Like, you know, you would imagine as the party got larger and larger, more and more people in it, it would start to break into smaller and smaller units of decision making, so that you would then, you know, if we started to grow again, you know, we would start to have more branches and then you know, multiple branches within cities, and then branches within wards and that sort of thing. So you would tend to see the opposite sort of happen, I imagine. Howard, next.
Hi. Steve Coleman, a name to toy with. Many of you will remember Steve Coleman, a former member. And Steve used to say, I remember him saying it on more than one occasion, that the party is part of the wider socialist movement, or something like that anyway. And what he meant by that, I think nowadays the term that one would use, or he would use, is the anti-capitalist movement. You couldn't use that term then because that didn't really exist. And what he meant by that was that we're not the only ones who sort of worked out what's wrong with capitalism and critique it and want to get rid of it, etc. Okay, the other organizations calling themselves socialists are different because they think they're going to get rid of it, but in fact they're not. They're seeking in one way or the other to reform it. But you can't deny that a lot of their critique is similar to ours. And it is. I mean, you buy one of these left-wing newspapers, as I do frequently, and frankly, I don't agree with all of it, but you know, I can't but agree with a lot of what they say. I just feel, as probably Steve Coleman did, that these people are a lot more, if you like, on our side than you know, lots of other people with different views. You know, the right wing, if you like, or even, you know, conformist individuals of one kind or another. I think the party has got this entirely hostile view to other organisations, the left-wing organisations, a bit less so to anarchists, as Paddy suggested, largely resulting from the party's history, the fact that the party broke away from the SDF, as Darren said, and therefore it was automatically going to oppose what the FDF was doing and what it was saying, whereas in fact quite a lot of what the party was doing and saying was very similar to the SDF. It's just that the ultimate solution was seen as something different. So, all right, if we were reinventing the party today, I think we'd have to sort of rethink our attitude to other organisations calling themselves socialists, and perhaps, you know, if you like, while making it clear that we, you know, our solution was different from theirs, perhaps, you know, how can I put it, not be quite so hostile.
Okay, yeah, thanks, Howard. Vin, next. Oh, Vin, we can't hear you.
Can you hear me now?
Oh, that's much better, yeah.
Okay, I think we need to take a bit of a look at ourselves.
Like you're speaking about suffragettes and what is it, the idea of it, a middle class sport or something. There were a lot of different types of suffragettes, you know. I mean, even within the Moss Side Pankhurst family, you know, the difference between Emmeline and Sylvia. But it's kind of like, did the party, I don't know the history of the party, but did the history of the party write it off like in the same way that there was a motion about feminism last year saying feminism is some kind of amorphous thing, where it certainly isn't. You know, there's lots of very specific definitions of feminism. I do think we need to, like, approach things sometimes with a little bit more thought. I heard someone write off Extinction Rebellion as just some middle-class people having fun, a party member. I think, you know, we should focus a little bit more on things that need a bit of thought, really.
Yeah, thanks, Wayne. Yeah, I think that's what you're saying there, and what Howard said as well, kind of point up how different things are today from the situation that Darren described, when they thought socialism was on the horizon. They didn't want to waste the time with anybody else who wasn't far behind that, and they weren't afraid to make enemies. And where we are right now, I think what we need is friends, not enemies. So I think we need to be talking to people. You know, that's what I think a new party would be doing.
But I think if we're still, you know, like dismissing groups like, say, feminists or people who describe themselves that, if that's the same way that we've dismissed suffragettes, which is the less optimistic way of describing women who were fighting for suffrage at the time, I think we haven't learned much.
Okay, Darren, do you want to say something?
Does Carla want to speak first? Because I've already spoken.
Okay, Carla.
Thanks, Darren. Yeah, I just want to come back on what Vin said. You know, the suffragettes weren't all middle-class women. There were a lot of working-class women. And I don't know if this is right or wrong, but I heard that they actually approached the Socialist Party of Great Britain for money, basically, to support them, and the party refused. I don't know if that's true. But that aside, I think you're right, Paddy. I think it would all be online now. I don't think we'd bother with flyers or pamphlets or probably magazines. It would probably all be online. But I take issue with that it will be all, you know, young people, because we do have young people in the party, and I'm afraid to say it, but, you know, it's the older members that are more active, from what I can see. So I take issue with that one. But and also the other point about, I think we would be, as Howard said, we would be more kind in our approach to other so-called socialists, or I think we would have a better approach to them. But yeah, I mean, I can't think of anything more than basically what you've said already, Paddy. I think there's you came up some good stuff there. So yeah, that's all I wanted to say.
Okay, thanks, Carla. Yeah, just on what you said there about older members being more active. Actually, you're right, aren't you? Because it's often, you know, retired people in the party that have got the time to do stuff. You know, people who've got full-time jobs and families just can't find the time. That's the exploitative system. It just steals all your time away. Darren, did you want to say something now?
Yeah, sure. With regards to what Carla said, that thing about, I've never heard that story before about suffragettes approaching party. I generally, and somebody who's kind of read a lot of stuff, so I mean, I'd be interested to know if that, you know, where you heard that from, because I've generally heard that. On the stuff about the magazine, I have a sentimental attachment to the magazine that I totally understand where Paddy's coming from, you know, if we're talking about starting from scratch. However, what I would say is what I found interesting, and I think this is a recent development, the last couple of years, is that, oh shit, Celtic just scored, sorry. There is
there has been an increase in the establishment of political magazines. The more, if you like, they're almost like coffee table magazines, or that sounds like a bit dismissive. So if we were starting again with regards literature, I honestly could see the party producing like a quarterly or a bi-monthly, almost like a book length journal. Because I actually think that one of the problems with the party, and I think and how we are able to engage with people, if you like, a layer of people who are very close to us, because that's what some people have talked about, and some people have said it's because we're hostile. I think those people should actually try and investigate these organisations a bit more and realise hostility is not one way. But I think a problem with the standard is, and this, I believe this is a conference resolution, is the standard is basically trying to aim to the first-time reader. And I believe that if the party decided to shift some of its focus to longer, more theoretical articles, which actually went into greater depth about where we are politically, why we've arrived at these positions, rather than the times we come across as quite simplistic, I generally think we'd actually engage with more people who are very, very close to us. I'm not saying they would agree with us. I'd not say they'd immediately join us. But I think they would actually think, all right, that's where you're coming from. You're not just this Edwardian caricature shouting, abolish the wages system like parrot-style fashion. There's a reason why you say this. And I think that's very difficult to express these views in like a one-page article. And I'm saying that if the party was to adopt the idea of like a longer form journal, I would hope that you would have those sort of articles, because I generally think that reading older articles where that's been employed, they just have greater longevity. Somebody's mentioned Steve Coleman. Steve Coleman was the preeminent writer in the Socialist Standard when I first came into contact with the party, and I loved him as a writer, I loved him as a speaker. Reading his stuff now, it has not aged very well, unfortunately, because I think he was writing in a particular style. It doesn't sort of sustain itself over a period of time. Whereas at the same time, I just scanned in a 5-page article by David Ramsey Steele on ecology, the first 10 years from 1971. And it's an excellent article. It's an article I'd be happy to share now, just to say, look, this is what we were saying in 1971. We anticipated green capitalism, etc. And I honestly think that that's part of our lack of legitimacy for some people, is because we come across sometimes as too simplistic. So that's one thing I would suggest in the here and now that the party should think about doing, changing its strategy. Sorry, I spoke too long. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Darren. That's interesting. I think the idea of longer articles for the Standard. We were discussing the Standard the other week, actually, but. I mean, we could do that, couldn't we? I mean, surely, we might have to increase the number of pages, so it would push costs up. But hey,
can I just come back right very quickly? I just reminded me. There's this really popular. This is where I think sometimes some party members beat themselves up because they basically don't know necessarily what's going on around them politically. There's an American publisher right now called Radical Reprints. And I think they're basically just reprinting like Panaquoic, Matic. They're basically reprinting heavy theory, and they're reaching an audience now that we would love to reach at this moment in time, because there is an audience out there for more theoretical stuff, and that's why I'm talking about, like, if we were doing a magazine today or doing a journal today, I would say there would be a call for like doing like this, this like thick journal with thick articles, because there is an audience out there, and I sometimes think some members don't realize that, or they just they're just content with like the one page article in the Standard, so sorry, that just came to me. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Darren. This is a perennial problem, isn't it? It's like, who do you write for? I mean, if we went for sort of, you know, the sort of theoretical target audience, if you like, you know, would we lose the first time readers? You know, if we went sort of kind of upscale, would, you know, some people already complain that the standard can be sort of hard to follow at times, you know, so if we make them longer and theoretical, will we just be making the problem worse? Don't know if there's an answer to that. So Freddie next. Freddie?
Well, in truth, Paddy, you have substantially said what I was going to say there. One of those individuals that have commented before that is interesting, and I mean it sincerely, it's interesting that the articles are in the Standard. I know myself that the frequency, that there's been frequent occasions where I have to go back over and over and over again to try and understand what has really been said. Now, you know, and I agree that the Standard is substantially, again, for people who may be interesting, people that are coming across, and therefore I think perhaps a bit less theoretical would be more. I mean, who's absolutely right and who's absolutely wrong in this? There isn't. It's a matter of trying to get the balance correct on it. There may be some people would be no longer interested in getting the Standard if it was just sort of everyday stuff and not Karl Marx said this in chapter 1, page 123, verse 8. You know, I would think the majority of people, when they start reading that, certainly new members, the new people to the Standard, some may enjoy it, but I think most of them wouldn't. And the other comment I'd like to make is, I don't believe the case for socialism is that complicated. I really don't. The case for world socialism, I think, if anything, when certainly, I don't know who everybody else speaks to, but I certainly know, and I can say that most of the people when I speak to, and we're talking about socialism, it's a great idea, Freddie, great idea, it really is, but I don't think it will work. And if you try and ask them why you don't think it will work, at times to me, it is the very simplicity of it. It's the very simplicity of what socialism will be, is where people find it perhaps to say, how could we have a world like that? So I don't see much wrong with the Standard. There's the occasional article that I don't readily understand. But by and far, I think the Standard is certainly worth its value, and it's consistently moving with the times on it.
Okay, thanks, Freddie. All right, Mike Foster, next.
Hello again. On the subject of a sort of a longer theoretical journal, I quite like the format of the Raven. Hopefully a few people have heard of that. I've only ever seen a couple of copies myself. I think it's an anarchist quarterly, I think, publication, and each one had a particular theme. So there might be one on, you know, the arts, and, you know, a few anarchist articles under that umbrella, and you know, a different umbrella theme each issue. So yeah, I quite like that format. And and this is a thinly disguised summer school plug, but we have recently, you know, for the last few years, had a theoretical speculative journal, which is the summer school publication, and that's also included input from some other organizations as well, but of course that's only an unofficial thing. It's only really sort of an extended handout for summer school. So it's an unofficial thing with a very small readership. I'm a big fan of the sort of theoretical journal quarterly kind of thing alongside the Standard. I think we should do both. And I think the tone of the Standard is about right. I don't think that really needs much reinvention, apart from the whole last paragraph thing, which always gets a bit stale. But yeah, I'll leave it there. Thanks. Cheers.
Okay, thanks, Mike. Dougie.
Well, I was going to say something similar. I have a theoretical journal as well. As I mean, the SWP, they seem to have a paper, and then they have a theoretical magazine or whatever. Well, we could have the standard and a theoretical magazine for people that are interested in that. But I mean, saying that there's a big market for it, I mean, I know organisations like the CWO or the ICC, you know, they have wall-to-wall words in their papers or whatever, and, you know, they can be difficult to read, you know, and I don't think they get much success from it. So I'm not sure how a theoretical journal would get us more members, but it's possible that some people would be interested in a more theoretical side of things, really. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, if I can just put my two pennies in there. I mean, how theoretical is theoretical? I mean, I've certainly read sort of, you know, left-wing magazines that were all about sort of, you know, let's all be very angry with the Tories and, you know, the next campaign and stuff like that, with absolutely no theory at all. You know, so I know we don't class ourselves as left-wing, but a lot of left-wing magazines really just very, very, you know, sort of vacuous, I think. So, you know, the Standard is trying to obviously balance between two stools, and whether it balances or whether it falls between them rather depends on the distance between the two stools. And so if you're talking at one end of complete first timers who know nothing at all about politics, and on the other hand, you're the other extreme, you're looking at you know, political theorists with 30 years or 40 years, you know, reading behind them, you're never going to bridge that gap, you know. So it's a gradient, isn't it? So you've always just got to, you know, pick the most judicious place to stand in it. Okay, Mike Brown, I think, next.
Yeah, I'll just say, yeah. Everybody says yeah when they first come on here. Just going off the... theoretical journal, the discussion. Going back further back, Darren pointed out that the Authority Fund was founded, you know, a long time ago, and expecting socialism within a couple of years. Well, I remember reading about William Morris and somebody called Bax, a friend of his who used to write with him, and they were worried about what's going to happen when the rest of the world. Capitalism expanded into the rest of the world and delay socialism for hundreds of years. They were right as well. If there was a new party starting or a new, you know, a certain new group starting, one thing I would be against was preserving Declaration of Principles like we preserved it. I would need to have it revised every 20 years. Because we become accustomed to all the wording of it, but it's very outdated. I mean, this thing about they're going to be hostile, they'll wage war against all other political parties. Well, they never did that with the Nazis or the Black Shirts. They chickened out of it, probably for good reasons. But, you know, it's a nonsense that is to have everybody outside the party as being an enemy. You, as you pointed out, there's quite a few people sympathetic. And you should keep the enemy for the people who are really enemies, like the Conservatives, the nationalists, people like that. I think you were probably right about the suffragettes, Paddy, because the party was bound by this hostility clause, so they couldn't even be sympathetic to it. And I was amazed that some of the early standards, they never mentioned that they were in the capital of the British Empire, and there was lots of empires around the world. And yeah, that's changed now. People would have to know that then, but they didn't notice that too much. I just wondered about that. You mentioned the Belgium and the Congo, but there was quite a lot of really heavy stuff going on in all the empires, including the British ones. You must have seen a news item yesterday, the British army killing people in Northern Ireland, innocent civilians. That was, 50 years ago, suppressed till now. Stuff like that. You know, we need to revise it every so often, not get bogged down. And this is why, one of the reasons why I proposed rewriting and updating this the Declaration of Principles into modern language, so it could be it could be translated into other languages, spread the ideas. That went down like a lead balloon, wasn't even reported in the ADM report because we didn't have a general secretary. But if we had to do that, we would come across some new ideas and revise it in modern language. We have a good idea of what we're doing, but we need to put it over better. On the ideas about the Standard and Theoretical Journal, the Standard is for first-time readers to try and get them to look at the ideas. We used to have a monthly or a quarterly journal called The World Socialist, which was more of a theoretical one. It only lasted seven issues when we ran out of money. But we should have two journals, really, a quarterly one, you know, even online. One to get the people into looking at the ideas and one to expand the knowledge later. Anyway, I think I've spoken enough.
Okay, thanks, Mike. I was going to come back on something, but I've forgotten what it was. But if I can remember, I'll come back to it. Darren, next.
Hi. Just I guess to try and be a bit more positive, because I understand I'm one of these negative sales. If we were starting again today, we would have a really active video department, like a YouTube channel. We would be making videos. We would definitely have a podcast. You know, these things exist. These things are very popular. Rightly or wrongly, a lot of people nowadays would sooner watch a video or listen to a podcast as opposed to read articles, read journals. I think you can do both. And, you know, that's something that not only we would do if we were to start from scratch, but that's something we should actually think about doing in the here and now. You know, I think it'd take some time to start it, but once it was sort of once it became part of the fabric of the party organization, then it'd be just like the Standard. You know, it'd be something that people coming into the party would sort of understand as part and parcel of our activity. So that's something I think we would do if we were starting from scratch today.
Oh yeah, thanks, Darren. A few of us have tried to do podcasts. It's not been a huge success so far because I think during all the lockdowns, people, you know, we were trying to get members to do, you know, to do it themselves and do a YouTube thing themselves, and it was just technically it was a bit too much of a challenge. But I think after you know when capitalism returns to something like normality for us, we can. Maybe be a bit more proactive and go out actually and help people do these things. I remember I was going to say. It was in response to Mike was talking about the Declaration of Principles, and I couldn't help thinking, imagine if capitalism somehow didn't kill us all, but lasted another 800 years, and we still had the same Declaration of Principles. It would be as comprehensible to people as Chaucerian Middle English is to us today. At what point would the party decide to change it, I wonder? Anyway, over to Freddie. Freddie.
Yeah, thanks again. This is just a question that you may remember yourself, Paddy, or some other party member might remember. I think it must be a couple of years ago now. There was a circular went round about and asking various questions about of party members, and it included questions like, you know, about the Socialist Standard and other mediums of communication, etc. I can't honestly remember it clearly, but it was maybe a couple of 3 years ago. So if somebody can remember it, fine. And also then, following on from that, if somebody can remember it, was the outcome of that survey published? Because I can't remember getting a copy of the survey, because I know I filled it in myself. If somebody's in a position to answer that, mainly just to find out what the party members were saying then, about communications and about involvement, etc., and what would we do and what we wouldn't do. If someone can remember and remind me, thank you.
Okay, so if anyone can remember what survey Freddie's referring to.
Yeah, it was a membership questionnaire.
Yeah, go on, Brian.
That me and Mike Foster sent out.
That's right, it was, wasn't it? Yeah, I remember now, yeah.
Right, yeah, and the results were published. It would give us plenty of insight into various issues and problems concerning the party structure and organisation, right? And those are going forward now at this present time. Mike can give you an update on it, or even yourself, Paddy, I'm not sure now.
I don't know. Mike Foster, can you help out with this?
The conference agenda, isn't it? I'll have to reread the report myself, a bit rusty on it now.
Are we talking about the restructuring plan?
Are we?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, so go on. Sorry, Mike, go on.
That was it, really. You know, we revisited what we'd looked at before, but more in the light of, you know, sort of Discord and how that's had a practical effect on how we're organising and whether the framework behind it needs to sort of catch up. But I mean, with that, really, we're only really sort of introducing a subject that we're hoping other people will take further. There's only a couple of us on the committee, so it's not up to us to set up a blueprint. So yeah, I'm hoping there'll be some more discussion about it over conference. Yeah, cheers.
Yeah, because we were doing was just putting forward some options for the party to consider, weren't we? So, any other thoughts?
Just a little pop in a salt, Paddy. When you're talking about change and whether we would set up, we would set up. And I think the only change that would occur, right, is a change in the party name, no longer being the Socialist Party Group, but be the World Socialist Party. And that would be it, right? Just the word Socialist Party. And the companion parties then would also be members of the World Socialist Party. You know, and they would drop their attachment to the national geographical positions. Everybody would become a member of the World Socialist Party.
Yeah, so you'd sort of have World Socialist Party, and then I suppose in brackets you'd have a geographical regions like British Isles or something like that.
No.
Not even?
None.
No? Okay.
And none whatsoever. Right, you know... We would concur with our internationalist stance and just call ourselves members of the World Socialist Party, and that's it. You know, wherever he was located, you know, then it'd be immaterial. He was a member of the World Socialist Party, and go from there.
Okay, well, I wouldn't fancy being on standing orders, having to count the votes after a global conference, but maybe it wouldn't work like that.
Definitely not, Paddy. What it would be, there would be sectors, right, within the World Socialist Party, right? You'd have the South American sector, the North American sector, the European sector, etc.
Yeah, that's what I said. You know, you'd put that in brackets so that people knew which one you were talking about. Anyway, I was actually thinking something else I thought of. I touched on the question of the word socialist, which nobody's sort of decided to take up. But, of course, the other argument about the word socialism is that it might come back in style. And in fact, it seems to have been mainstreamed in America in particular recently, although, of course, it doesn't mean what we mean by it, so whether that's useful to us or not, I don't know. Howard next. Howard.
Just to say in response to what Brian has said, there's already a World Socialist Party. They're trots, I think, so we'd be pinching their name, just as another group of Trotskyists some time ago pinched our name. So don't think we could call ourselves the World Socialist Party, certainly not now anyway. But maybe it could just be World Socialist Movement, which we've got already anyway.
Yeah, I can't help thinking that all these groups fighting over the word socialism is like is like, you know, people fighting over a dead dog. What's the point? Anyway, Mike Brown. Oh, yes. Go on, Mike.
Yeah, thanks. One thing, Brian, we have to remember is the party's legal name we have to keep for the legacies. Don't forget, we've been existing on legacies for the last 20 years, and we still need to remind that. But I would prefer the word World Socialist, not World Socialist, but Earth Socialist Party. It's a bit more modern, and nobody's got it yet.
Okay, Earth Socialism, kind of like that. Of course, if we were a new party starting from nothing, we wouldn't have any legacies to worry about, would we? So,
Paddy, it's ESP. That's what I like about it.
Okay, that's just put me off it. Okay, Howard?
I was just starting to say, it's been an ongoing discussion in the party this over the years, whether it's, you know, a benefit or a disbenefit to call ourselves socialists, to use the word socialist. And, you know, some people here may remember that, I think it was in the 70s, that Paul Breeze and a group of people from Stoke broke away from the party, not through any disagreement with the principles or the ideas, but because they thought our terminology was putting people off. And if I remember rightly, they call themselves One World, and they produce quite a lot of very good literature, trying to substitute their own terminology for terms like socialism, working class, et cetera, et cetera. Needless to say, we never got anywhere. So I don't think, you know, on balance, there's any sort of, there'd be any advantage in using a different word other than socialism to describe what we're looking for. And, you know, as people have often said, sometimes it gives us a weapon which we can use in our arguments. You know, we can say that a lot of people talk about socialism, but what we mean is something quite different. Okay, I mean, if people see the word, they may automatically see it as something that you know, isn't what we're about, but not a lot we can do about that, really. So I think on balance, you know, we keep the word. Yes. I think it's more an advantage than a disadvantage.
Okay. Thanks, Howard. I sort of avoided the question, the whole kind of question of the kind of, you know, the socialist lexicon, you know, the language that we use, because you certainly remember Derek Devine. We've talked about that before. He left the party in the late 90s or middle 90s because he just thought that no one ever used the word capitalism anymore, and we should stop using the word capitalism because no one knew what it meant, no one used it, you never saw it, which at the time was true. So he had to, he wanted to get rid of all of the sort of language, you know, the sort of Marxist language and terminology. But what he had to do in the end was he had to invent a whole new terminology, which was, of course, even more difficult because, you know, then he had to explain what all that meant. And as we know, the anti-capitalist movement came very much to the fore just a couple of years later. So we do have this situation. There's no right answer to this, is there really? Mike Foster?
This is only sort of a jokey observation, but SPGB is a bit of a misnomer anyway, isn't it? Because when the party was formed in 1904, Northern Ireland wasn't around. Socialist Party of Great Britain excludes Northern Ireland. Not that there's many members over in Northern Ireland. So I'm guessing if we started these days, we'd call ourselves, or maybe we wouldn't, Socialist Party of the United Kingdom. But that would mean SPUK. And we wouldn't want to be a bunch of SPUKs, would we? I think we'd go for World Socialist Movement. That's what I prefer. Or the Socialist Party. But yeah, World Socialist Movement gets my vote. Cheers.
Well, in fact, I got a letter from a member the other day complaining that in the Socialist Standard now, in the contacts section, it says UK. He was strenuously objecting to us describing this particular landmass as the UK. So there you go. not a popular move, for quite apart from the reason that you gave. So yeah, I wouldn't want to be a spuck either. I can see a couple of people typing things. All right, no. Anybody else got anything to say? Vin doesn't like UK either. It reminds us that we're in a kingdom. Well, that's true. And but then people don't understand what Great Britain is, do they? They think it's just British people bigging themselves up. But as I understand it, it was to distinguish between British Isles and Brittany. Brittany was the Little Britain. I think that's right. Anyway, somebody can correct me if I'm wrong.
You're correct, Paddy. That's why it was invented, the name Great Britain, to distinguish it from Brittany.
I think there was also another reason for it. I mean, during the 19th century, there was a huge attempt to big up the UK in all sorts of ways. Like, for example, not many people know that the Pennine chain, was actually named after the Italian Apennines in order to associate the UK with the Roman Empire. And there were all kinds of moves like this. So I suspect the Great was behind people's thinking as a way to big up the country just as much as it was a term that we generally use for the larger of two places.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't know that about the Pennines. I always wondered why the two were so similar. I assumed that, the Great Britain thing was more of a medieval thing. Maybe not. That was a time when in church Latin, Scotland was known as Albania. Howard?
Can I just salute Darren? He's an absolute fund of knowledge, detailed knowledge on absolutely everything to do with the party and things connected with the party. Well done, Darren.
Yes, I'm always a bit terrified about saying anything about party history when Darren's here.
Well, there's people waiting to join the speaking queue. Can I ask you, when in the bank holiday, when are they starting? You haven't put that down yet. The summer school meeting or pre-summer school meeting. When are they starting at that time?
I think you mean the day school at the end of of May. Okay. Mike Foster, have you got anything to say about that? We haven't got any times yet.
Just the times, that's all.
Yeah, haven't quite been confirmed yet. Yeah, hopefully in the next couple of days. There'll be one in the afternoon and one in the evening. That's probably how we'll do it. But yeah, it haven't been confirmed yet, but yeah, not too long. Yeah, cheers.
Okay, but I hope it's not a nice day because everybody will be out in the sun if it is. And they won't be listening to it.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, that's consideration. So yeah, we'll have to have a think. So yeah, I'll try and get something sorted on that in the next couple of days.
Can I come in, my Paddy?
Oh, please do.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, I missed you, Freddie. Sorry.
Listen, Paddy, no harm done. I mean, it's always interesting, this discussion, and I enjoy it in the various views, particularly about the party name. Again, somebody will correct me if I'm wrong, at least I think they will. I think it was Michael Foote in his book. He spoke about the SPG being called it the Small Party of Good Boys. And I think this was Michael Foote that did. It may have been Tony Benn. One or the other, maybe, and also described that when he read our literature, it was he also described it as the purest of milk. So, you know, there must be something about the SPGB there. But in terms of changing the party name, well, you know, for me, I'm not convinced about the wisdom of it. You know, it's the content, it's what we're about. And you can either call it a marathon, as what it was called a few years ago, or you can call it a snicker. The content is the same. I think that's where we should be at on this.
Thanks, Freddie. I agree. And I think, you know, I wasn't really hoping to raise a discussion on changing the party name, because we've had this discussion for years. It's a bit sterile, isn't it? It's never really going to go anywhere. I think I was more interested in sort of the other things, practical things maybe, that we'd do different if we started up today. But I think we've had quite a good discussion on it. Howard's put up quite a good quote from the David Ramsay Steele article in 1971. I think I'll just read it out of interest. 10 years ago, anyone who spoke of the balance of nature or claimed that our food was being poisoned on a mass scale would have been classed along with nudists, vegetarians and socialists. Such talk identified the crank and the weirdo. As for ecology, few could even spell it. That's how David Ramsay Steele's article started in 1971. Good stuff. Not sure if there are many vegetarian nudists in the among socialists, though. Okay, well, if nobody else is going to say anything, I think we've probably exhausted the subject, haven't we? So we may as well call it a day, call it an evening.
Thanks, buddy.
Thanks for everyone. Thanks everyone for coming. And don't forget that on Friday we're going to have the talk is Daily Life in Socialism. Paul Bennett's giving the talk. What would life be like in a classless society based on production for use? Okay, so that's another subject that's been discussed a few times before. So that'll be interesting to see what Paul comes up with. So we'll leave it there and see you all on Friday, hopefully.
Thanks. Cheers.
Cheers, buddy. Night, all.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Thank you. Bye.